Reason is merely a faculty of the mind which, in the event of the soul taking on a divine substance, becomes, as it were, a thing of non-existence, for the faculties of the soul supplants reason. That is the reason that so distinguishes man, as mere man, and which will continue in this spirit life to distinguish him as God's highest creation, so long as man remains mere man, even though he becomes the perfect man. But I will not write more on this now. I am your friend and brother, Jesus. I am here, your mother. Let me say just a word, as I have heard the Master's message and I am glad that he has given you the assurance that he has. His love and care means to you so much more than you can possibly realize. He is so very loving and gracious and powerful, and when he comes to you he means to bring with him a glory that is not with him ordinarily as he works in this earth plane. Well, I love you too, with a greater mother's love which now fills my soul and makes me so happy and contented in the knowledge that I am an immortal child of the Father. I know that sometimes you feel discouraged and almost believe yourself alone, and that we are possibly not what we tell you we are, and then we try the harder to reach your soul and consciousness with our love so that these feelings may leave you, and we generally succeed and are happy when we do so. Many of your friends are here tonight, and you have around you a wonderful amount of love and effort to make you realize that you are not alone, and you must try to believe what I say. I am very happy and progressing all the time, for I am now higher in the celestial heavens than when I last wrote you, and so is Helen, bless her dear heart, and of course, your grandmother has progressed and she has become a wonderful spirit, all glorious and shining. The spirits who sometimes write about her and who live in the lower spheres of course never see her as she really is, for they would not be able to withstand her glorious appearance. But she brings her love with her to the Paget Messages 1917, these lower spheres and these spirits can feel the influence of that love and do so. She says she will come soon and write you a message of truth. All send love, and of course your mother gives and leaves with you her love in all its abundance. And I am happy also, my dear boy. Keep your faith and trust, and even though you may live the years that you have been told you, yet they will be short, and then you will be with us and your happiness will be great. Good night and God bless you. Your loving mother, Anna Paget. I am here, Helen. Well, there was a spirit who was very anxious to write, and I was disposed to let him do so, but as you are tired and are not inclined to have others write tonight, I told him that he would have to postpone his writing until another time. Who was it? It was your poor friend William Perry, and he was so disappointed that he could not write. He is still in a very sad and dark condition and does not seem to be able to progress much out of his sufferings. We have been trying to help him, but his belief that he came here to suffer eternally still holds him in his dark and suffering condition. I believe though that a conversation with you may do him good. He is still waiting here. He says he will come, and I know that he will wait anxiously for the time to come. Well, dear, I am glad that the Master wrote you tonight such a letter of love and encouragement, for it will do you good. Try to follow his advice, especially pray more to the Father. We are all so anxious that you get in the condition of which the Master spoke, for it will help you so much in your own development. I love you as you know with all my heart and soul, and so does your dear mother, who wrote you. She was so happy in doing so, and she is a beautiful spirit. As she told you, we have both progressed and we are nearer the fountainhead of God's love, and it appears more real and divine the nearer we approach. I will not write more now as it is late. Well, I will not forget, and soon I will write, and you must be convinced that I have not forgotten. We thought it best not to write then, for the reason that I have told you, but hereafter when you are ready in the early evening we will write. Even though we may have to appear a little unkind to these dark spirits, we will explain to them, and I think that they will be contented. Well, my dear, feel that I am very true to you in my love, and let not your mind be troubled, but love me with all your heart, and you will realize that I am your own true and loving, Helen. February 16, 1917. I am here, Daggett. Let me say just a word, as I am anxious to tell you that Perry has had demonstrated to him, by the appearance to him of certain suicides, the fact that his suffering will not be everlasting, and it is wonderful to see what effect the demonstration had on his hopes and belief that there may be salvation for him. Your grandmother brought these spirits to him and had them tell Perry their experiences, which, in the darkness, were so very much like his own, and then told him that their present condition is due to the divine love of the Father, which came into their souls in response to earnest prayer. He commenced, at once, to send his aspirations and longings to the Father for this love, and all these spirits joined with him in prayer. It was a very impressive sight, as you mortals might say, and his mother was the praying and so very happy. Your grandmother also brought Judas, and he was so filled with love and glory, that his presence made Barry look in wonderment and astonishment, and when he was told that the glorious spirit was Judas, he said that now he knew there was hope for him. Well, Paget, I must not take up more of your time now, and I only wrote, because I thought you would like to know the result of Perry's experience with the bright spirits who had once been suicides and inhabitants of the hells. But sometimes I should like to come and write you as to some of my knowledge of the things of the spirit world. I will say good night. Your old friend and brother in Christ, Taggart. I am here, Mrs. Perry. I have heard what Mr. Taggart has just said, and I feel that I must also come and tell you that my son has had his mind and soul open to the truth, and that now he is rid of the awful belief that held him in darkness, and is praying to the Father with all the earnestness of his soul. Oh, my friend, how can I ever thank you enough for what you did? I cannot, but I can pray for you, and I will with all the earnestness of my soul, and I know the Father will bless you. So good night, and God bless you. Your friend, Mrs. Perry. 521, The Paget Messages 1917, I am here, your own true and loving Helen. Well dear, I know that you are happy at hearing the result of your conversation with Perry, and you should be, for it means a soul saved that would have remained in darkness, in all probability, for a long time, and even then might never have found the way to the divine love, with all its blessings and benefits. Well, the work is wonderful and the results are great. I see that you are tired tonight, and I will not write longer. So with all my love, I will say, good night. Your own true and loving, Helen. February 25, 1917. I am John C. Calhoun. I come to say a few words in reference to our international affairs, and I say are because I am still interested in my country and feel that I am a citizen thereof, although I am a spirit and not a mortal. Well, as you know, when on earth I was a Democrat, and one who believed in the independent rights of the various states of the Union, and that whenever those rights were infringed upon it was the right of the state so affected to withdraw from the Union. But my contentions are now of no practical importance, for the decision of war has settled that question, and for the best, as I now see, for had the results been otherwise, our country would not now be the glorious and powerful nation that it is. And I also believed in the absolute right of our country to enjoy all the benefits and privileges that any other country in its international affairs of government enjoyed, and if necessary to preserve such privileges, to resort to the force of arms. But I did not believe in becoming mixed up in foreign disputes, or in the grievances that one of these countries might have against another, or in recognizing the rights of one in preference to the rights of another. In the present difficulties, were I now a mortal, I should apply the same principles to the present war and leave the respective nations to settle their disputes by and among themselves. And yet, I realize that my country is not in the position of independence and isolation that it was when I lived, and that circumstances may occur and conditions may be established that will call for the application of principles and measures a little different from those that I have above indicated, and such circumstances and conditions now exist. 522, as I can see, caused by the unusual claims and practices of Germany in attempting to destroy the commerce of not only the nations against whom it is contending but also the commerce of the neutral nations, and more largely, that of my own country. This the governors of the U.S. should not submit to for one moment, and to do so, indicates on the part of those who control the affairs of the nation either an utter want of understanding of the requirements of the occasion, or a cowardice that has no excuse. I fully realize that peace is desirable, and should be sought for and maintained whenever consistent with the country's honor and well-being, but when peace is to be maintained at the sacrifice of honor and everything that goes to the welfare of the nation, then peace must be thrown aside in the necessary means, no matter what they may be, must be used to maintain and enforce the rights of the nation. I see that Mr. Wilson is loath to enter into the war and is waiting in the hope and expectation that something will happen or not happen, whereby he may keep the country out of the conflict, but his waiting will be in vain, for the war is here now and the sooner he realizes that fact, and acts upon it, the better it will be, and the sooner the end will come. Germany is desperate, and it has reason to be, and it will not hesitate to destroy our ships of commerce or of war when it possibly can. And the fact that the ship is an American one or carries American citizens or sailors will not deter its destruction. Then why wait until May of these ships shall be destroyed and many lives lost, before showing to Germany that the U.S. will maintain its rights and protect its people? I have been trying to reach the ear of the President and also the ears of some of his legislators, in order to impress upon them the necessity for action, but have not been able to make the rapport, so that my thoughts could be received by these men. And I don't suppose that such a desire will ever be realized. And the pity is that it is necessary. Mr. Wilson is a man of intelligence and good intentions and patriotism, and it is a little difficult for those who cannot read his mind to understand the position that he takes. But to us it is plain that the great desire to keep the country out of war, which idea I must tell you has obsessed him and caused him to believe that by doing so he is winning the approbation of the people, causes him to be overcautious and certain that if war comes he shall not be the moving cause. The Paget Messages 1917. Of course, ordinarily this may be commendable, but in the present circumstances it is more than deserving of condemnation and in its results may almost prove to be criminal. If someone with influence could only awaken him from this condition of obsession and persuade him to act and act quickly, it would be a thing devoutly to be wished for. The war is here and its rumblings are approaching, and it does not require an experienced ear to catch the sounds of its approach. Well, I have written more than I intended, and thanking you, will say good night. Your friend, John C. Calhoun. I am here, Raleigh. I am Lord Walter Raleigh, the Englishman, who loved and was beheaded. Well, I have heard what the last spirit wrote and merely wish to say that the tenor of his discourse is wise and should be followed, but, as he says, there is no way to make it known to the men whom it is intended for, and who only can apply it. I am also interested in the war, as you may suppose, to some extent, but only because the country to which I once owed allegiance and claimed the protection of is now a very great sufferer by reason of the efforts that are now being made to subdue her. But yet, my interest is not very great, for I have arrived at that condition of brotherly love and the true conception of right and wrong and of the certain destiny of men, that all are my brothers, and the name of Englishman, German, or Frenchman makes no difference in their destinies. The human soul, when it comes to the spirit world, is without nationality, and the destiny of that soul does not depend upon the fact that it was lodged in the form of an Englishman, etc. No, the thoughts of earth, to a large extent, have left me and I am intent on my progress in the spirit world and attaining to that condition which will bring me the most happiness and enable me to do the most good to my fellow spirits, for I am working to help those who are not in such favorable condition as I am. I live in the fourth sphere and am a quite happy spirit, surrounded by many things that make me happy and contented, and am free from all those things that caused me worry and sufferings while on earth. I have lost all my recollections of the acts and deeds, and even thoughts, of my earth life that caused me so much darkness and unhappiness when I first came to the spirit land, 523, but you must not think that it was an easy thing to get rid of these recollections. For I tell you that they clung to me like leeches and seemed to draw from me all my heart's blood, if I may so express it. The hells of those who have led lives of wrong or injustice are not imaginary, and all who think that the stories of such hells are the idle tales of superstitious mortals will be greatly surprised when they have shuffled off the mortal coils. But, as I say, I have progressed out of my dark condition and am now in the light, and quite happy in my pursuits that so much appeal to me. No, I do not know that such is the fact, and can scarcely conceive that you can know what you say to be true. Of course, if such things are true, I should like to become conscious of the fact and join in the search of discovery, but I doubt that you have knowledge on the subject. Yes, I should like to make the experiment, and am willing to do so in seriousness and with a mind open for conviction. Well, I see a great many spirits present, some bright and some dark, but none preeminently bright or beautiful as you suppose may be here. I have done as you suggested, and one comes and says he is Mr. Riddle, and I must say that he is a wonderfully bright spirit, and has an appearance that is different from the appearance of those spirits that I see in the fourth sphere. Well, I have heard what you said to him, and I will go with him and listen to what he has to say in reference to the subject matter of our conversation, but I doubt that he can tell me anything that is an improvement on what I already know. But as I told you, I will listen in seriousness and consider what he may say to me. So, thanking you for your kindness, I will say good night, Walter Rawley. February 27, 1917. I am here, Luke. I heard the doctor ask, what do the celestial spirits think of this war, and I will in a few words tell him. Well, first he must know that the celestial spirits are not so much interested in the war, and the success or defeat of nations, as in the salvation of the souls of the individuals who compose those nations, and the fact that the individual is a German or an Englishman or a Frenchman has no influence upon the desire of the spirit to help the soul of the individual. All are alike important and dear to the celestial spirits, and the same love that will save the one, will save the other. So you can see that the war is not of so much importance. The Paget Messages 1917. Of course, many mortals are made spirits who are all unfitted for the life in the spirit world, and in that view, the war is of importance to the celestial spirits, as their opportunity for doing work among mortals, either directly or through other spirits, is by such slaughter interfered with. And the spirits who come so suddenly to our spirit world are subjected to greater suffering, and are more difficult to impress and teach the way to truth and life, than they would have been if allowed to live their ordinary mortal lives. All wars, to some extent, interfere with the orderly living and dying of mortals, and we deplore them, but as to the right or the wrong of wars, we do not judge, but leave that to the conscience and judgment of the individuals who bring about the wars, and are responsible for them. The acts of individuals, whether they apply personally, or affect others in the way of being members of nations, are all subject and responsible to the laws which control the thoughts and deeds of mortals, and the recollections of the same, and these laws do not call for or demand the paying the penalties of the individuals as parts of a nation, but as individuals, irrespective of the fact that they belong to and control the affairs of a nation. No sin is of less interest to spirits because it arose from the wars of nations, than if it had arisen from the act of the individual as such, and we celestial spirits are interested in the war that is now going on, and because of that fact, for I say, it causes the paying of the penalties demanded by the law much sooner than it otherwise would, sick. And we are interested also, because war creates hatred and desire for vengeance on the part of those engaged in them, and hence adds to the burdens that the individual so affected will have to get rid of when he comes to the spirit world, in order to progress and find happiness. War to us is an incident of human existence, and the right or wrong of it does not enter into our consideration of what should be the penalties that those who are responsible for it should suffer. The soul of each individual shows its own sins and wrong done, and only this condition of the soul determines the state of its possessor, and the destiny that its own thoughts and acts have made for it. Now, from what I have said, you may suppose that we are indifferent to the happiness or misery of mortals while on earth, but that is not true. We realize that man, to a large extent, must work out his own destiny on earth, and that we spirits cannot control that work, except as we may influence the 524 individual mind and thoughts of men, and that there are times when men give way to their passions and evil ambitions, in which we cannot influence them. Even God himself does not attempt by his omnipotence to do so, but leaves men to the exercise of their own wills, and the consequences of their own acts, and this, although many suffer physically and mentally who are innocent. But all men live not unto themselves, but are so united in society that the acts of one must have their influence on others, and, hence, those who live in these societies are subject to these influences, and to the consequences that flow from them. It may not seem right that the innocent should suffer because of the acts of the guilty, and if the celestial spirits could prevent it, such sufferings would not take place, but they cannot so prevent the intermingling of suffering between and among those living in societies, for to do so, they would have to interfere with the operations of the laws controlling these things, which they cannot do. So you see, war does not mean to the high spirits what you might suppose, and while they have their sympathy and love for all the children of men in these terrible conflicts, yet, they must leave men to the consequences of their own deeds and thoughts, and man must do the suffering. But, nevertheless, we do try to influence those who have the control and determination of these things, and our work is always to try to influence them to do that which will bring to men the greatest happiness. We do not interest ourselves as to whether one belligerent nation or the other will win the battles, because we know that only men themselves can decide this matter, and we don't try to interfere to bring about the success of the one party or the other, as we know that we are powerless to bring about any result. Think for a moment, and you will understand, that if we had the power to determine the issues of war, we should have the power to destroy sin and error, because both are the subjects of the creation and control of men, and I say that if we had such power, sin and error would long ago have disappeared from the world, and men made free. No, we can work only with the individual, and as the individual soul is made pure and righteous, the aggregate of these individuals composing a nation will become pure and righteous, and war will become impossible. I do not think it best to write more now, but it will say, that we celestial spirits think of war as there, the Paget Messages 1917, creature of mortals, to be controlled and ended by mortals, and that we cannot decide the issue one way or the other, and hence, to us, war is an incident in the living and dying of mortals that we cannot prevent or create. Your brother in Christ, Luke. I am here, your old friend, Edwin Forrest. Let me say just a word. I merely want to say that I am progressing, and am out of my darkness and in the light of love, for I have been praying since you last heard from me, and have had the prayers of many of the bright spirits ascending to the Father for me. Well, Ned, I never thought that all this happiness could possibly come to me, for, as you know, when I came to the spirit world I was sinful and all ignorant of the great love, and found myself in darkness and suffering, and why God should have been so good to me, I cannot understand. But this I do know, that if it had not been for your spirit friends and especially your wife, I would have remained a long time in my darkness and soul slumber. But, thanks to you, I had the benefit of their love and kindness and prayers, so that I am now on the way to the higher spheres that she tells me of. I sometimes come to you at the office and see just what your condition is, and think that I am somewhat responsible for the same, and know that I am, and I cannot tell you how I regret what took place, and try to help you with all my powers. And I want to say to you to keep up your courage, for you have many powerful spirits working for you, and I know that they will soon cause a change in the condition of your affairs. I also know that you are rich in this love, for these spirits all tell me that you have received it to a large degree, and are doing a great work among spirits, and this I know, and are also preparing the way for bringing to humanity the truths that will give to men a knowledge of the love and plans of the Father for their redemption. It may seem a little strange to you that I should write in this way, and I hardly know myself when I realize what I was such a short time ago, and what I am now. Very soon now, I shall go to my mother and try to help her, as I have told you. I intend to do, and I pray that I may succeed. It is also wonderful to me that sometimes I think that I must be dreaming, but of course I awaken to the fact that my experience is true, and that this love is a real thing, and that all my spirit friends are real. Yes, I see Lipscomb sometimes, but I cannot tell you that he is any better. He seems satisfied with his condition, and it is hard to talk to him, for he has not lost the characteristics that he had on earth. He still thinks that he knows it all, and that the life he is leading is more desirable than the one that I try to tell him of. Miller is still in darkness, though he listens to us at times, and makes the effort to realize the truth of what we say to him, but he seems to be unable to comprehend the truths that we try to tell him. We are working with him and will do so long as he will let us try to help him. Well, Your wife says that you are tired, and I will stop. So good night. Your old friend, Edwin Forrest. I am here, James A. Garfield. I come tonight to say a few words in reference to the present condition of the affairs of our country, as I have been much interested in what has taken place in the past few weeks, and especially in the attitude of the President with reference to Germany and its inhuman method of carrying on its system of underwater destruction of merchant ships. I know that what I say may not amount to anything for several reasons. One is, that no one save yourself and a few of your friends will know what I say, and another, that a live dog is of more importance than a dead lion. But nevertheless, I feel that I should give expression to some of the thoughts that come to me in reference to these vital and critical conditions that now exist. The President has been very much hampered by his desire to preserve peace, or rather to keep our country out of war, and so strongly has this desire possessed him that other things of greater and more vital importance to the welfare of the country have been ignored and made matters of secondary consideration with him and his advisers. Peace is very desirable, and human lives are very dear to those who may have to answer the call to possibly sacrifice theirs, yet the honor and preservation of the nation are of much more importance than the former things, for peace is not necessarily a thing that can exist only in the absence of war, for it may exist in reality while war is progressing, to a greater degree than when war is actually in operation. I mean that even now there is very great want of peace in the individual lives of the people, even though the country, as a nation, is not at war. 525, the Paget Messages 1917, and the life of the individual is not of so great importance as the life of the nation, for if the nation be destroyed, or subjected to the dominion of another country, the life of the individual may not be worth the living, as in the case of poor Belgium. But, as I was saying, this desire on the part of the President to preserve peace has caused him to ignore the rights of both the nation and the individual as they have been threatened and injured by the actions of Germany, in its assaults upon the rights of the nation to continue its commercial pursuits, and enjoy the freedom of the seas, that have always heretofore been preserved, and to establish which this nation, in days gone by, fought to establish and have recognized. He will be disappointed in his expectations that some kind providence will interfere, and prevent the overt act, that he holds to be necessary for justification on his part to enter into the conflict, as that overt act will not only take place, but has already done so, and the cause that he has been waiting for is now a thing of reality. It is a great pity that he has delayed all this time. For if he had taken a firm and determined stand some months ago and let Germany know that America would maintain her rights, even by force of arms, if necessary, Germany would not now be the aggressive, belligerent that she is, and many vessels would not have been destroyed, and many lives have been saved. But this wavering policy caused the Germans' rulers to believe that he did not desire war, and that he would refrain from entering actually into the war, and consequently, that he would let go by any act on their part that did not purpose to injure the rights of the U.S., and this feeling on the part of Germany increased until it was led into doing things that it might otherwise not have done, and having gotten into its present desperate state, it came to the conclusion that the only thing it could do now, was to adopt the plan of blockade that now obtains, and destroy everything that interferes with the carrying out that plan, and that the U.S. must submit to its demands or do whatever it might think best to protect its rights, hoping, though, that it would avoid war by recognizing the blockade and keeping its vessels out of the zone of the same. Now the time has arrived when Mr. Wilson can have no possible excuse for remaining neutral, and he will have to do what he should have done a long time ago. I can see that this delay will result in the destruction of many vessels and their sacrifice of many lives. But it is the only thing that can be done to save greater calamity. So I hope that he will delay no longer, but declare war or call upon Congress to declare war, at once, and thus put the country in a position to effectively preserve and maintain its rights. And I make these predictions, that as soon as this shall be done the beginning of the end will be established, and that before the middle of summer peace will come and the war will cease, though its effects will appear in more certain horror than they do now, and will be felt for many years to come. I hope that he will act now, and if I could induce him to do so, I would without hesitation or doubt of the right of so doing. I will not write more, so good night, your true friend, James A. Garfield. February 28, 1917. I am here, Luther.